Matthew chapter 11, and we read from verse 16 to 30. Matthew 11 from verse 16. To what can I compare this generation? They are like children sitting in the marketplaces and calling out to others, "We played the pipe for you, and you did not dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not mourn. For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, 'He has a demon.' The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, 'He is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' But wisdom is proved right by her deeds." Then Jesus began to denounce the towns in which most of his miracles had been performed, because they did not repent. "Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! For if the miracles that were performed in you had been performed in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I tell you, it will be more bearable for Tyre and Sidon on the day of judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, will you be lifted to the heavens? No, you will go down to Hades. For if the miracles that were performed in you had been performed in Sodom, it would have remained to this day. But I tell you that it will be more bearable for Sodom on the day of judgment than for you." At that time Jesus said, "I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this is what you were pleased to do. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." When you have a couple of horses or oxen pulling a plough or a wagon, they have to be yoked together. We don't see that happening much these days because we all have our cars and tractors and so on. But, you know, in many parts of the world still today, and of course years ago in our own country, the farmer would get two animals, two horses, say, and he would have to train them to be able to work together. They would need to be perhaps of a similar size and be able to pull that plough together. And they would become a pair. They would be the ones that the farmer always puts together. And you have that phrase in the scriptures, a yoke of oxen. And it simply means two oxen who are used to working together, who are yoked together to pull the plough or the cart. And they make a great unit. They can do a great job, this great strength that they're able to achieve as they are yoked together. And provided the burden is not too heavy, they're able to be very effective. But of course, some yokes can be unbearable. If animals don't walk together, if they're not used to each other, they're not walking in step, or if they're pulling in opposite directions, then the yoke is very unbearable for them. It's interesting, in Deuteronomy 22 and verse 10, the people of Israel were told not to plough with an ox and a donkey yoked together. And presumably this is because a donkey, being a smaller, weaker animal, would have to take a larger load, and it would be cruel to the donkey. And I was just reading recently in 1 Samuel 6 the account of when the Philistines wanted to return the Ark of God to the Israelites. And they'd been getting all these tumors, and many of them had died. And they wondered, was this because the God of Israel's hand had reached out against them? And so they really set up a test. And the test was this: they would put the Ark of God on a new cart, and they would get two cows to pull this cart, and they would see what happened. And the test was in this way: Firstly, the cows would have their calves left behind in the stall. And secondly, the cows had never been yoked. And to the astonishment of all the Philistines, this cart pulled by these two cows went straight to the land of Israel. And they knew that those tumours were from God. There you go. So that's the yoke in the Old Testament. Later on in the prophets, in the Old Testament, the picture of the yoke is often of an unbearable burden, a difficult yoke. For example, in Isaiah 47 and verse 6, Isaiah prophesied that Babylon would lay a heavy yoke even on the aged. And Peter in the New Testament in Acts chapter 15 describes the law as a yoke and says the law was a yoke that not even we or our fathers could bear. And how much less should they impose the law of Moses on Gentile Christians? But here in this verse, Jesus says, come to me, take my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. This is not a burdensome yoke. This is an easy yoke. And Jesus here is making a wonderful invitation and a wonderful promise. So many people feel weary and burdened, longing for relief. And Jesus says to them, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. It's an invitation for you to come to Jesus, that he will give you rest. So we're going to simply look at this wonderful invitation that the Lord gives, and we'll start by thinking about the heavy burden. The heavy burden. Now, Jesus often used a physical picture to help people see their spiritual need. You remember in John 4, when Jesus was in Samaria, and he sat down thirsty by the well, and the woman of Samaria came to him, he asked for water. He was talking about physical water, but soon he started talking about living water. That if she would drink of this living water, she would never thirst again. And her interest was sparked, and her understanding of physical thirst, and as Jesus talked to her, she began to see that she had a spiritual need as well that needed satisfying. Or when Jesus fed the 5,000 with bread. He then went on to talk about that he was the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. He used that physical picture of a spiritual need. Or in John 9, when Jesus healed the man who'd been born blind. Jesus then went on to speak about spiritual blindness and spiritual sight. And that man who was born blind not only received his physical sight, but came to see who Jesus was. And so, here in our verse, Jesus talks about the burdens and the weariness that people feel. And we're all familiar with this, aren't we? And he wants us to be, as we're aware of our burdens, to see also that we have spiritual burdens. That spiritually we can be weary and that we need him. Now, from childhood to old age, we all experience burdens, don't we? You know, for the child, having to finish their dinner is a great burden. Not so much of a burden when you grow older, but for the child, chewing that meat. I can remember the hours I spent chewing bits of meat that I just couldn't swallow as a little boy. Had to finish it. Or when you get a bit older, homework is such a burden. Lessons are a burden. You can't wait for your school days to be over. And then you go to work and, oh dear, more burdens. Unrealistic deadlines. You have to be at work every morning at a certain time. And you long for retirement. You retire, and what happens? More burdens. Everything in life seems more difficult Things that once you could pick up with ease just seem so heavy now. You're forever at the doctor's. Burdens of life. Now, please don't misunderstand. It's not that everything is burdensome through life. Thankfully, God gives us times of joy and happiness. But nonetheless, this picture of the weariness and burdensomeness of life is something that every single one of us here in this room is familiar with. And if you're not, well, God's given you the most wonderful life imaginable. You know, the Lord uses this picture to help us to see that there are spiritual burdens we have. You see, we feel burdened because we live in a fallen world. God cursed the ground. Work has become toilsome. And try hard as you might, you will never feel on top of things. There is always more weeding to do in the garden. There is always more cleaning to do in the house. There is always more fixing and sorting. You think you've tidied the house and, you know, unless you kind of lock it all up and put it behind glass, it's soon going to become untidy again, isn't it? At least if you have children in the house. But that's life. We live in a fallen world. We don't feel on top of things. Now, that doesn't mean we should give up and not try and live in a pigsty, but nonetheless, we feel the burden of life because we live in a fallen world. And the fallen world, nonetheless, promises us so much if we will work hard. And yet the world is far better at exhausting us than it is at satisfying us. Isn't that your experience? You try hard for something, and even if you get it, it's not all it's cracked up to be. Who was that author who said, "I wish when I was younger, someone had told me that when you get to the top, there's nothing there." You've climbed mountains recently, haven't you, Martin? Scafell Pike. And what, you know, all that effort, you get to, and it's just rocks. That's all it is, just rocks on the top. You think, well, surely this, well, it's a bit better if you climb Snowdon, at least you get a cafe on the top. But that's life, isn't it? You work so hard, the world promises us so much, and it doesn't satisfy. We feel burdened because of other people. There are needs of others, little children, they forever need our attention. Or we feel burdened because other people ill-treat us. Jesus spoke about teachers of the law and how they placed on people's shoulders such a heavy burden. They themselves weren't willing to move a finger to help with those burdens. But people can do this, can't they? They can put burdens on us that are unbearable. We feel burdened because of our guilt and our shame. Are you someone who tries to hide your sin? I guess to a greater or lesser extent, we all do, don't we? We don't like people to really know what we've done or thought or said. And sometimes people can live in fear of their sin being discovered. I'm sure you've heard of that time when... who wrote Sherlock Holmes? Arthur Conan Doyle. He was a bit of a prankster, and he sent a telegram to someone saying, "All is revealed, flee." And the chap did. He was never seen again. And it was purely a joke. You know. But people can feel burdened by a sense of guilt. And it seems to me in this day where things from the 60s and 70s are being raked up, that if you're a celebrity and you've got a shady past, you must be feeling incredibly burdened. Some people feel burdened because they're trying to make up for the failings and the sins of their past. And that's what religion tells you to do, doesn't it? You failed, like, do these good things, do this. But you're never sure if you've done enough to make up for the past. And of course, you haven't done enough. And it simply adds more burden to you. As Peter said, that the yoke of the law was an unbearable burden. It demanded perfection. And which of us can live up to that? The burden of our guilt, of our shame. You know, as Jesus looked out on people, he saw this unbearable weight that was bowing them down. Remember that crippled woman who'd been crippled, bent double for 18 years, and Jesus healed her. And he talked of her as someone whom Satan had bound for 18 years. Or that woman who'd spent all that she had on doctor's fees to heal her. 12 years she'd been like this, and they hadn't been able to help her. But Jesus was able to stem the flow of blood. Here in Matthew 11, Jesus sees the towns that had rejected him. They'd seen his miracles. They'd seen so many wonderful things that Jesus had done, and yet they did not repent. And Jesus sees them with this huge burden weighing down heavily upon them. Let me read to you verses 21 and 22. Woe to you, Chorazin. Woe to you, Bethsaida, for if the miracles that were performed in you had been performed in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I tell you, it will be more bearable for Tyre and Sidon on the day of judgment than for you. Tyre and Sidon were notorious for their greed and their cruelty. Likewise, Sodom in the next verse. And yet it would be more bearable for Sodom than for Capernaum. Here was an unbearable burden that these towns were facing on the day of judgment. And Jesus sees it. They don't see it, but Jesus sees it. He sees them being weighed down by this. So let me ask you, do you feel burdened this morning? It might be from poor health or from hard work. It might be from the demands that others make on you. It might be from your guilt or of coming judgment. Jesus sees your burden. And Jesus does not leave you to be crushed by that burden. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. How does he do it? Let me read to you from Isaiah 53, verses 4 to 6. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Jesus deals with the root cause of weariness and burdens. This fallen world, sin, and the punishment that we face. He has taken it. He has taken that burden. And so we sang, he took my sins and my sorrows. He made them his very own. He bore the burden to Calvary and suffered and died alone. Do you feel burdened? It's a heavy burden. It's a burden that you cannot bear. In a fallen world, fallen creatures are unable to bear the burden. The burden of their sin, the burden of coming judgment, even the burdens of life we struggle with, but how much more those spiritual burdens. But Jesus is the one who offers to give rest. So we've looked at the burden. Now let's consider the yoke. It's a heavy burden, but it's an easy yoke. The easy yoke. Jesus offers people rest. Those who are weary and feeling burdened, feeling like a heavy load has been put on their shoulders, Jesus says, come to me and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. Now, this is not an offer for a holiday, some kind of extended holiday. Come to Jesus and the rest of your life is a wonderful holiday. You put your feet up. There's no more work, no more deadlines, no more little children to attend to. You're going to have a holiday. No, he's not saying that. No, he's saying, look, come to. He's not saying, come to me and I'll take your burdens off you. And you can. No, he's saying, take my yoke upon you. Take a different yoke, my yoke. Okay, it's not freedom from any yoke. It's saying, I'm going to give you rest from your burdens by taking my yoke. Do you see that? Come to me, all you are weary and burdened. You've got your burden. Okay? I'll give you rest. How? By taking my yoke. Now, it's important we understand what this yoke is and what it isn't. The yoke that we take is not doesn't mean that now Jesus kind of comes alongside us and he sort of puts his shoulder to the work, so all our plans and all our dreams are now going to be fulfilled by him. No. Take my yoke, not your own yoke. It's not your own plans and your own dreams that Jesus comes along. Now, that's religion, isn't it? You know, God will do this for me. And Jesus, come and take my yoke, my will. Submit yourself to my will. Nor does it mean that our daily work will no longer be toilsome. It's not that, you know, you become a Christian, your garden doesn't produce any thorns anymore. Sadly not. You still get weeds, you still get slugs, you still get, you know, aphids and black fly. And you still have deadlines to meet. You still have problems in your life. We're not yet in heaven. But this is a verse that is a promise of rest for here and now. Of course, ultimately, it's an eternal promise. Rest for your souls. But Jesus says, come to me now. I'll give you rest now. That's the implication of the verse. So what is his yoke? What does it mean for us to be yoked to the Lord Jesus? Well, think of that horse here. Think of a young horse. I know some of you children really love horses. Well, think of a young horse. And if that horse is going to get used to being yoked, maybe it'll start off by being yoked to a more experienced horse. And the young horse has to take the older horse's yoke and has to learn to be able to pull that wagon or pull that plough. Now, if the older horse is patient and gentle, then the younger horse will find it easier to learn and things will go well. And soon they'll be stepping in pace and the yoke seems easy, that the burden seems light. And this, I think, is the picture that Jesus has for us here. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. My yoke is easy. My burden is, it's still a yoke, it's still a burden, but it's light. Because you're in step with the Lord Jesus. He's patient with us, isn't he? He's gentle with us. He is humble. He's forgiving when we get it wrong. You know, if we pull one way, he doesn't sort of yank us over and half break our neck in the process. But he's gently leading us back. I'm gentle and humble. Come to me, all you who are weary. Learn from me. He's that more experienced one. And as we take his yoke, we learn to walk a different life to what we used to. Now, Paul is a good example, I think, of someone who was yoked to Jesus Christ. To the outsider, Paul's life must have seemed a terrible life. Think of the time he was stoned outside Lystra, left for dead. He was shipwrecked. He was imprisoned. He was hounded by his enemies. What a difficult life. And yet, when you read what Paul says, he sees these as light, and momentary afflictions, doesn't he? Because he was ready to learn and willing to serve. And he said at one point, in Philippians, he was torn between the two, whether to die and be with Christ or to stay here and go on serving him. It was a win-win situation for Paul as he faced death. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. And Paul did a huge amount in his life. Oh yes, he carried a burden, but it was light in that sense. It was a partnership. Paul described himself in 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 9 and also in 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 1 as someone who was working together with God. A fellow worker. He had to learn this. He had to learn to be content, for example. Again, at the end of Philippians, he describes how in all different circumstances he learned to be content. And then he says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Philippians 4:13. See, he took on Christ's yoke. And what a wonderful life he was able to lead. You see, this is the life that Jesus calls us to. A life of walking with him, following his direction. Doing the right thing in every situation. Now, we don't know where that might lead. But we obey his commands and we find, as John tells us in 1 John 5 and verse 3, that his commands are not burdensome. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. It's not that we have no yoke, but it's a light one. His commands are not burdensome. You struggle with sin and temptation. We all do. As Christians, we grieve, don't we, that we're still struggling sometimes with the very same temptations that we were struggling with 10 years ago. But here is our help. Here is our hope. You see, to take on the yoke of Jesus Christ is to be freed from the yoke of the law and to be freed from the yoke of sin. And Paul describes it in Romans 6. We are no longer slaves to sin. We're not yoked to sin. If you're yoked to a stronger animal, you are obliged to go where that stronger animal takes you. You're yoked to it. You can't. And sin was like that. It was more powerful than we were. And whatever sin told us to do, we had to do it. We were under its mastery, to change the picture. But we're no longer slaves to sin. The Lord Jesus has broken that yoke. He says, I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. We're under his mastery. We're slaves to righteousness, Romans 6, verse 17. Now, of course, sin still calls out to us, doesn't it? That's what temptation is. It's saying, look, come over here. Come and do this. Now, before we were Christians, sin could drag us over, and we just had to do it. But now that we have been yoked to Christ, we do not have to sin. His commands are not burdensome. My yoke is easy. And so we do not have to let sin have the mastery over us. By the Spirit, we can put to death the sins of the body. Romans 8, verse 13. So we consider ourselves dead to sin and alive to righteousness. This is the easy yoke that we have. We have a new master, Jesus Christ, and we follow him in his power. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So we've considered the heavy burden, the easy yoke, and finally, let's think about the gracious invitation here. The gracious invitation. I want to give you three reasons why you should respond to Jesus and take this yoke upon you. Three reasons. Firstly, only his yoke is easy. Only his yoke is easy. As we said before, the world offers so much, but is far better at exhausting us than satisfying us. Now, the children came home from the library the other day, and little Benji brought back a book on sports cars. And so I sat down on the sofa and we looked through it. And there were Lamborghinis and Porsches and Ferraris. And it told you how fast these cars could go. It also told you how much you needed to buy one of them. Well, they were slightly beyond Benji's... well, he doesn't even get pocket money yet. You could pay more for a car than for a lovely house. Put it that way. But you know, they found if you buy a fancy sports car, that the kind of excitement, do you know how long it lasts? About 3 days. It's astonishing, isn't it? You could spend, I mean, for most of us, the rate at which we earn and save, well, it would take us a lifetime, if not several lifetimes, to be able to buy a Lamborghini. And you do all that for 3 days of excitement. That's the world. That's what the world offers you. Of course, it won't tell you it's only 3 days of excitement. Now, if the world cannot even fulfill its promises to us here and now, what hope can the world give us for eternity? Religion and trying to be good, these things will only exhaust you. Take my yoke, says Jesus, because my yoke is easy and my burden is light. If you want to put it like this, you could say only his yoke really fits comfortably. You try and put any other yoke on and it will chafe. It will be burdensome. It will be difficult. Only this yoke is easy. Only this yoke is light. That's the first reason why you are to come to Jesus if you are weary and burdened. You will find no other yoke, no religion, no amount of doing good, no amount of achieving things in this world will provide what you need. They only provide burdens. What Jesus Christ provides truly is easy, is light. Second reason. Only with his yoke will you find rest for your souls. Only with his yoke will you find rest for your souls. We are made body and soul. Now the world does not even talk about your soul. It doesn't acknowledge the existence of your soul, let alone offer any hope for your soul. But we are body and soul. Jesus talked about the soul frequently. He said at one point, of what profit will it be to someone to gain the whole world and then lose his soul? Or here in Matthew, and turn back to Matthew chapter 10 and verse 28, Jesus talked about the soul again. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one, that is God, who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Our bodies will die, but our souls go on, and they can experience that second death, that eternal punishment of hell. But Jesus says, come to me, and I will give rest for your souls. Only his yoke will grant rest for your souls. Jesus invites you to come to him. And your heart cries out, Lord, give me this rest for my soul. You will not find it even offered anywhere else in the world. But Jesus says, come to me. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me. And you will find rest for your souls. You will find hope. You will have that wonderful sense of joy as you think about being with the Lord. Death takes on a completely new meaning for the person who is yoked to Jesus Christ. Third reason. We've said firstly, only his yoke is easy. Secondly, only his yoke will grant rest for your souls. And thirdly, the third reason to come to Jesus is because he is speaking to you. It's a little word that I've not yet emphasized here. Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. I love that little word, all. Don't ever think that what Jesus offers is only for the good and the great, people like the Apostle Paul. No, Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. Every single one of you. There is no one who can turn to Jesus and say, ah, but I couldn't come. No, he says to you, come to me, all of you. And after all, remember, Paul was a great sinner. Yes, he became a great apostle. But he was a great sinner. And if he could become a fellow worker, so can you. Are you wearied by life? Do you feel the burdensome of living in a fallen world? Are you afraid of eternity? That burden of the day of judgment? Are you burdened? Well, Jesus is calling you. Do you hear his voice? My sheep hear my voice. And he's calling you. And this is what he says to you. He would say this if he were here in person. He would say, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Let's be quiet for a moment and then I'll pray.